What I'd like to talk about today for the next 18 minutes is resistance to practice. And this ended up being one of the main themes of Sangha today, but I actually had planned on talking about this beforehand. All the reasons that we can find not to practice. So I was just saying I'm on the night shift now, and I'm basically tired all the time and shouldn't be driving a car, and I've lost 3 salad dressings this week because I'm so ditzy from not sleeping enough. I've been leaving salad dressings everywhere. It's getting quite expensive to keep buying new salad dressings. And in our tradition and in most shamatha circles, you'll hear people talk about dullness versus alertness a lot. And you'll hear people talk about mindful acceptance of whatever is arising. But it seems like dullness is sometimes the one exception to this. That, you know, when sadness is coming, notice sadness. But when dullness is coming, you really need to do something about it. And there is some utility to that instruction. There's a particular place in the path where trying to overcome it to whatever degree you can is the main thrust of the path. But there's not all that much you can do. There's a pretty famous, maybe the most famous Hindu text called the Bhagavad Gita. And one of its central theses is the way of a sage is attachment to action and non-attachment to the consequences of action. So if you find that you're sleepy or dopey, there are a couple sort of quick, easy things you can try that might make you less dopey, right? You can set the intention to be less dopey. You can open your eyes. You can try breathing more deeply. Try drinking a cup of coffee, things like that. These are all simple, very quick things that you can do that almost certainly will work sometimes and not work other times. And so you can try a little, you know, you can try these little adjustments. They're a good idea. But dullness, too, is something to be observed. That it used to feel to me like you couldn't learn anything from meditation with dullness, but this isn't true at all. You can actually learn quite a lot from meditating with dullness. That this theme of insight is equally available in every moment, I would think of as the motif for this Dharma talk, perhaps as the motif for life. You can be very sleepy and learn a lot from your meditation. I've been experiencing this myself recently, especially when you get over the attachment to being not sleepy or the judgment that this is a bad meditation. Another thing that can easily get in the way is happiness. That the Buddha says, I teach 2 things, suffering and the end of suffering. And that's probably what brought all of us or most of us to meditation, is the promise that you get to have more positive experience and less negative experience. And I'm wondering, for those of us who have cameras on, just by a show of hands, if you've had the experience of days where you feel really happy, skipping the meditation because it's supposed to make you feel happy, and you already feel happy, so there's no need to meditate today. Has anybody else fallen into this trap? Just me? Okay, good. I'm glad Paul's with me. And I can't see Matt and Michelle. Okay, cool. I can't see Matt and Michelle, so... now I can see you. Yeah. So, awesome. Well, hopefully it doesn't lie in your future. Oh, yeah, that's a good habit to have. There's the 2x2 matrix of the right effort component of the path, and one of those is take all the bad habits that you don't have and don't develop them. So that's good. What we say in Dharma circles a lot is that happiness is entirely internal. Happiness and suffering are entirely internal. But this isn't most people's experience. That for most of us, living in San Francisco is preferable to living in St. Louis, right? And it really seems like San Francisco is bringing more happiness and St. Louis is bringing more suffering and you know, even driving through St. Louis. No, I'm sorry. I won't riff on St. Louis anymore. There's certainly a degree to which this is true, that there's certainly some relationship between what we're doing, the outside world, and our mental state. The trouble with positive mental states induced either by things in the world or positive mental states induced by meditation is that they're very conditional. That if we really enjoy San Francisco, it's probably because, you know, we have 2 dozen friends there, and we like them all. And if 2 or 3 of these people move and the social group collapses, if a rumor spreads about us and we're not welcome in the social group anymore, if all of a sudden we're not making $300,000 a year so we can't afford a one-room studio in San Francisco, all of these conditions are required to allow this happiness to continue. And this is what I've been reminding myself. When I feel really happy, meditation feels like a buzzkill, you know? It feels like I just want to play. I just want to share it. The world is so delightful. I just want to continue delighting in it. And this is one of the sufferings that the Buddha describes is the knowledge that the happiness is going to end. And this is kind of the buzzkill of meditating when I feel great is, sitting down to notice the happiness is a very quick reminder that it's not always going to be there and that it isn't the only thing that's there now. This is something I usually forget, so I'll go ahead and repeat this. When you feel really happy, you also feel other things, but you don't notice these things and you don't want to notice these things. There's a kind of blocking of reality to try to keep the happiness in and to try to keep anything else out. And this is the normal mode of being, right? Put a wall around the stuff that you like so that it doesn't get wrecked and make that wall bigger and taller. Go ahead, Igor. So, yeah, so let me make a different suggestion, which is actually where I was about to go with it, is there's the happiness that comes from pleasant mental experience. And it really is happiness. You know, it'd be ridiculous for me to say I know what happiness is and you don't or something like that. It really is happiness that comes from things going your way and pleasant mental experience. Let me keep going for a little bit. There really is happiness, but there's the suffering latent in it of knowing it's going to pass. But more importantly, the happiness of non-attachment, as far as I can tell, exceeds any other form of happiness that you're going to experience. So when you feel really good and you notice the full state of your mind and you give it permission to change as much as it would like to, it's often replaced by a much bigger form of happiness. And that when you let this go, when you tell it you don't need it to hang around, when you recognize its impermanence, it often is replaced by an even bigger form of happiness. That you can actually make it a meditation practice to invite the happiness to leave when it's ready. And it feels like just sort of like I have a crank dial on my smile that's getting so big my face is about to explode. And I haven't really found the limit to it. Sometimes your head kind of blows up from the delight, and you get into a cool, trippy sort of space. But so I would say that this is what you can use to overcome the resistance to meditation caused by happiness, is the memory that this happiness is conditional. It's certainly going to fade. It's not the only experience that you're having right now, and that meditating while you're happy is going to lead to, can lead to this non-attachment that leads to way bigger happiness than you're really capable of getting from daily life. One more thing I'd say on that topic is, Paul was talking about the idea that meditation is about having purifications. And I've certainly felt this way also, that the Buddha says there's four types of paths. It's a 2x2 matrix of whether the path is short or long, and whether it's hard or easy. And it seems like for the vast majority of us, we fall into the hard and long quadrant. And that the path becomes, that meditation becomes a lot about suffering. That meditation becomes a lot about seeing unpleasantness. Any amount of happiness or joy that you're able to bring to the meditation is not as good because life is short and happiness is a good idea. But joy and happiness are actually two of the seven factors of enlightenment. Allowing these to permeate your meditation as much as they're willing to is an awfully good idea and can help avoid this trap that we are this pit of bottomless suffering and trauma and bad karma, and that meditation is like exorcism or baptism, cleansing. You know, it certainly has those aspects to it, but that's not the whole thing. The last thing I'd like to talk about is not meditating when you feel miserable. And I'm sure I don't need to ask for a show of hands. I'm sure we'll all raise our hands on who has sometimes skipped meditating because you feel miserable and it would be nice to feel something else. Well, the hands are going up, but recall, I didn't request you can put your hands up. It's a free country. Technically. Oh, that's right. Paul's in a different country. So meditating when you're miserable is quite a challenge. One thing you can try if you're really miserable is walking meditation. That sometimes it really is the case that if you're very miserable or very angry, very terrified, sitting down and closing your eyes is simply giving you an opportunity to be more miserable, more terrified. Then it's just amplifying the negativity. It's so large that all you can do there is sit. All you can do is sit there with it. Chila Dasa has been repeating this quote a lot recently, which is, "You can never get enough of something that almost works." So if you're too miserable to meditate, what else are you doing instead? And does it fall into this category of something that almost works? You know. Are you, I've confessed a bunch of times, my vice is doing nothing on the internet, you know, reading political articles, I don't really know if they're true, looking at videos of cats. Most of what we do to try to get rid of our misery is something that kind of briefly postpones while increasing our misery. And the more miserable we get, the more drawn we are to these old failed habits. It feels almost like a, I think it's a Woody Allen joke that like, what is it? You know, you do 100 things right, you do one thing wrong, and it's proof that your mother was right the whole time. You should never have tried to do anything independent, and you should just do whatever she says. I think this is a strong tendency to go back to old failed habits when things get really bad. And the first noble truth, right, is that everything is going to be dukkha. So on one hand, there's this idea that if you're really happy, meditation is going to be a buzzkill. It's about reducing suffering. But on the other, I think maybe a more pervasive problem is the idea that meditation is supposed to lead to positive mental experiences. And to just sit there and be miserable is a waste of time. Wait and come back to the cushion when you're not going to be so miserable. A large part of the path is exploring and getting to know your own suffering. And when you see the suffering with wisdom, when you see the suffering with acceptance, with mindfulness, with context, however you want to put it, all of a sudden it's not so bad anymore. In fact, the promise of the path is that even the worst suffering isn't such a big problem when you see it in the proper way. So meditating when you feel particularly miserable is actually a really fruitful time to practice. Having that opportunity to look at the suffering, having that, Mahasi Sayadaw calls it the desire for deliverance, you know, it's a lot of motivation to practice when you're particularly miserable. There's something Igor talked a lot about when he first joined was, you know, isn't it good to be joining at a phase of my life when I'm particularly, isn't it good to be joining at a phase of my life when I'm particularly unhappy? And, it kind of is. Suffering's a great motivator for practice. It's probably the best motivator for practice. Especially if you can see, I've talked about this a few times, that I like to think of suffering as like a tree. And that there's the, you know, these various leaves of, I had a fight with my girlfriend, and my business isn't going very well. And you can see that all of these leaves are hanging on the same branch. And that this branch is, I'm a very special person, and I need things to go my way. And that this branch is part of a larger branch that has a bunch of branches coming off of it. And this branch is maybe something about impermanence, like I don't want to die, I don't want things to fall apart, I don't want people to dislike me. I'd like things to go up and not down, and I can't handle this impermanence. And meditating on suffering that way, where you can look deeper and deeper into what's this leaf, what's actually causing this suffering, you can get to a place where you actually cut a branch. If you've ever been in psychotherapy, this is the way that a lot of different psychotherapies will work, is you say, well, I got in a fight with my girlfriend. Why is that a problem? Well, it makes me unhappy right now. Well, why is that a problem? And you can sort of keep going down, and you can actually cut this branch, and all the minor branches and all the leaves fall dead when you cut the branch. To continue this metaphor, enlightenment is cutting the roots, is getting so deep down that you cut it at a place where it can't grow back anymore. So next time you've decided to meditate and you're absolutely convinced that you're too miserable to meditate, try to remember how good this is for you, that it's not going to feel good in the beginning, that there'll be a lot of pressure to go do all the wrong things that you're accustomed to doing that you know won't solve this problem. But see this as like whatever's going on is the perfect ground for insight. Whatever's happening right now is the only ground for insight, is the only ground for freedom. And this decision that this moment is not the right one to be mindful of is probably the biggest thing coming between us and insight, is the rejection of this moment on the grounds that we'd prefer to meditate on a better one, or rejection of ourselves on the grounds that we'd like to wait until we're better. And, you know, maybe we'll be better in the morning after doing the 10 stupid things we know will make us worse in the morning, and that then it will be time to meditate.